Welcome to the Potter Discussion.
Everyone, welcome back to the Potter Discussion, discussing Harry Potter, Fantastic Beasts, and the Wizarding World fandom. I'm your host, Oscar, and this is episode 1, 2, 3. We had 1, 2, 1, we had 1, 2, 2. Now we are on episode 123, and I will say I am very excited for this episode because this is an episode that I have been wanting to do for so long. Today we are talking about the music in Harry Potter. I'm a huge fan of music in general. I play a couple instruments and I really enjoy making harmonies, putting melodies together. That's what I did for episode 100, and I really enjoyed that. And the music of Harry Potter is something that I'm also very interested in. There was many composers working on Harry Potter. There were a couple of conductors. And really the way the whole thing was put together, I think, is an art. And this will not be the only episode on the music of Harry Potter, but this will be kind of a general episode, kind of an overview, literally what I think, quick history. So naturally what today's episode is going to be all about. I am super excited for it. I mean, I've been waiting for this episode for so long. I wanted to do it for episode 117, I think. So it's been about a month that I've had this in the works, even more than a month. And I'm super excited to be recording today, and I hope that your thoughts will be similar to mine. The Instagram. I mean, before we get into this, I just have to say, the Instagram is going crazy. So we're about 4,500 followers by now, and by the time you hear this, honestly, we're going to be at 5,000, because I got about 500 followers yesterday. Yesterday was the 25th. I got about 500 followers. So, yeah, it's going pretty crazy, which is all. I mean, that's a ton. I was at 4,000 in the morning yesterday, and I'm about 4,500 today. So that's just, it's mind-boggling. And one of the reels over there, one of my reels is at almost 3 million views, which of course is the highest reel out of, like, that's the most views I've ever gotten. I don't get 2 million. I don't get 3 million downloads on the podcast. Of course, I will in the future, but not now. So amazing things are happening over there. You can suggest your ideas. You get some great content, some memes, some reels, some awesome Harry Potter stuff. It's a great way to get deeper into the Potter Discussion and Harry Potter community. So go check that out. It's at the Potter Discussion on Instagram. I'll leave a link in the show notes. The Quillen Inc. newsletter is also coming out this Wednesday, the 30th of March, 2022. When you sign up, if you aren't already, you will get the ultimate guide to a perfect Harry Potter marathon, giving you 2 Easter eggs from each movie to make your watching experience just that much better. In addition to that free PDF when you sign up, you will also get 2 monthly emails talking about all about your favorite topics of Harry Potter. We've had some about some emails about Tina Goldstein. You've had some about predicting the Fantastic Beasts movie. So there's a lot of fun stuff going on over there. Again, that will also be a link in the show notes below for a free sign up, your ultimate guide to a perfect Harry Potter marathon, and emails every other week talking about Harry Potter. Let's get into this episode. So the first thing I think it is very important to go over is really the history of the music in Harry Potter. Not, you know, literally where, like, the styles, everything like that, but the composers. Really where the composers worked and how many are on the movies and what movies and years each composer worked for. So I think the most well-known is John Williams. John Williams was the composer for the first 3 Harry Potter movies, Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone, The Chamber of Secrets, and The Prisoner of Azkaban. He composed from 2001 to 2004. I think he composed the most movies out of the 4 composers that worked on the Harry Potter series in total. And his music is very recognizable. As you might hear from other podcasts, he is a very, you know, clangy, bangy style of music. Very busy, a lot of things happening, which is a very hard type of music to compose, but I think it definitely comes across well. Some of the songs that I find are very interesting by him are The Chess Match. I love that. It definitely sets a good mood, very low, kind of intense. I also enjoy The Quidditch Match. That is another good one because it's very long. It really tells a story just with the song. You could turn off the screen and listen to the audio. The movie would be just as good. And of course, Hedwig's theme has to be up there because you hear it so much. And it is just the trademark of Harry Potter. When you hear that, you know exactly what you are hearing. And I think he definitely set a tone for a very good future in music for Harry Potter, because the way he wrote it, it was very easy to go off of that and create another movie that was just as good, which is exactly what the other composers did. And I think that definitely played a role in how Harry Potter became the phenomenon it was. And after the era of John Williams, Patrick Doyle stepped in 2005 for the Goblet of Fire. And this is the movie that I saw, and I was so confused because it didn't feel like Harry Potter almost. The music was much more, you know, kind of like strings and swaying and all that kind of stuff. I think with Harry and Winter, I think, is a very good example of Patrick Doyle's style and the style of the Goblet of Fire. We hear it's a very, very good, because it, like John Williams, it tells a story without even having to see what is actually happening. Hearing the music, you can guess kind of what's happening in the movie without even having to see it, like we said before. And I think that's a quality that definitely composers should strive for when writing music, telling a story and really providing that different side of the movie. So Patrick Doyle composed Movie 4 in 2005. Now we have Nicholas Hooper. From 2007 to 2009, Nicholas Hooper composed Movies 5 and 6. Nicholas Hooper, I believe, is another composer like John Williams who has composed many things, a very famous composer, and the song that I distinctly remember very enjoying very much the first time I heard it was Fireworks by Nicholas Hooper. That was if you couldn't guess, that was in front of George, set off all the fireworks, the middle of the owls in the fifth book. And I really enjoyed that. And I think that's another one where it's very different. It's very out there. There's a really strong component of electric guitar that I found like jarring the first time. But later on, I came to appreciate how different it was and how it really kind of encapsulated the tone of the Weasley twins and really improved the scene. I also really enjoyed the music I thought was very good, Dumbledore's Farewell. I think that was another piece that definitely was vital to how the scene played out. Of course, music really is what makes or breaks, you know, a very emotional scene, and I think it definitely makes it in this case. Dumbledore was in that song. I can really hear him in there, and I think it makes sense for that to be, you know, Dumbledore's Farewell. And I don't know if there was a Dumbledore's funeral, but I think when everyone was around the tower and the funeral in the book was kind of, you know, combined into one scene in the movie where Dumbledore's like still on the ground by the tower and they all held up their wands, they got rid of the dark mark, and that was kind of the whole Dumbledore scene, and we never saw him again. But Dumbledore's Farewell by Nicholas Hooper in the Order of the Phoenix, not Order of Phoenix, in the guy in the Half-Blood Prince is another one of my favorite songs in this series, and I definitely highly recommend you listen to it. And finally, we have Alexandre Desplat from 2010 to 2011, Movies 7 and 8. This, I think, is my favorite. Now, okay, I'm not going to get into my favorite, but this is really what I think a movie should be. Like, it has all the components. If you don't look at the movie, it tells the story. But I think Desplat managed to take in what we all knew the movies should be. Because not only did he make an amazing score, and not only did he compose this awesome music, but he also knew how to end the story. He knew that the perfect way to end it was to make it so we heard the end in the music. I think he did a very good job of kind of gathering all the themes and motifs and different little, you know, everything, and kind of mashing it perfectly into the two movies that he did. And I think Desplat also had the benefit of composing two movies that were basically one story. That definitely aided him because he didn't have to have two different mindsets, or even three in the case of John Williams. He just had to make sure that the transition was not, you know, that jarring. But I think it definitely was. I think the movie one, part one ends at Shell Cottage, and I think part two begins at Shell Cottage. So that, I think, is a very good jump-off point and landing point. I think it definitely made it a lot easier for him to move along with the story. But if you pick out any of the songs, I think some of the ones that I found really, really compelling were Courtyard Apocalypse, I had no idea why it was called that for a very long time until I saw that it was when the courtyard was being invaded. And I was like, well, it's almost like a courtyard apocalypse. And I realized, oh. So I really enjoyed that. I think Status is also a really good one. Snape to Malfoy Manor, I also enjoyed. That's a very fast one. That was the beginning of part one. Obliviate, also. I loved Obliviate. All these, by the way, are in my playlist that I use. Like, I listen to my music playlist every single day. You have to know this. So all these songs are in my playlist that I listen to every day, and I absolutely love them, which is why I know the names of all of them. Those are really some of my favorites in the Deathly Hallows Part 1 and 2. And I think it was definitely a very good ending to an era and a new beginning to the future of Harry Potter. So all of these composers, we have John Williams, Patrick Doyle, Nicholas Hooper, and Alexandre Desplat, all did very well on their movies and all definitely paved the way for a bright future. So now that we really understand the history of all this music, I think it's important to really get at what wants to be captured in the music. And there are, I think, definitely some different answers to this, but I think we have definitely gotten at this previously. And what this whole kind of means, what's the goal of music in the Harry Potter series, it is just to complete the story. So, of course, we have two halves. We have audio and we have video. Like this podcast, we have audio. That's the main component. And that's why we see why audio is so important. With music, I mean, not only does it make it seem more exciting, make it more emotional, but I think it can also play a role in really giving more depth to the story. For example, Hedwig's theme. Hedwig's theme is a theme, like we said before, that is unbelievably recognizable. If I asked you to think about the Hedwig's theme right now in your head, of course you could conjure it. If I asked you to think even about like the Star Wars theme, you could probably think of it. Now if I asked you to think of the Superman theme, you can't, because it's not recognizable. Harry Potter is one of those things that is just so recognizable. You can see it and you would know exactly what you're looking at. Hedwig's theme is that same thing in song form. It plays in times of hope, in times of heroism by Harry, by someone else, in times of light. And we can understand that by looking at the scenes when it is played. So I think the main play, like the main time it is played, is when there is a point at that Harry has to make a decision and he has to stand up for something. In the Quidditch match, when he gets the snitch, when he's, you know, at the Dursleys for the first time and the snake escapes, we see Harry making a choice and we see Harry trying to either like protect someone, make a hard decision. It's in times of hope that the Hedwig's theme is played, and I think that also helps with the story. It also, I was just thinking about this, it can also kind of be used to foreshadow what's going to happen. If a certain character has a certain theme, like Hedwig's theme, I guess in the case of Harry, of course, the Burrows theme, even like Hermione or Dumbledore's theme, all that kind of stuff. If we see someone who we don't know who it is, if it's like supposed to be kept a secret, and we hear a theme played and we recognize the theme, we can maybe guess who that person is. We can also see if something like, is there's a prison break, or there's, you know, like in the Crimes of Grindelwald, when Grindelwald, you know, commandeers the carriage and gets away, we can listen and into the music. I believe it's called The Thestral Chase, that you can go listen to in the album of The Crimes of Grindelwald. What that kind of is we can listen to and like kind of pick out all the different themes and all the different styles that are used. Now, that's one of the songs that I think is meant to go with the movies, because if you listen to it, it's hard to follow really what's happening. If you don't know, like if you haven't seen the movie, you couldn't guess what was happening. If you listen to the song, you can make a good guess by the title and by, you know, everything else, but you couldn't say, all right, now he jumped out and now he's, you know, falling and land in the river. It's like, you can't get that specific if you don't have the video, but if you've seen the movie and you understand really what's going on, it makes the song all the more enjoyable. Because I think the one I'm thinking of is Tina and Newt's Trial. That song was one that I also have in my playlist that I listen to, and I hear it and I always go, I can see what's happening, because this is the part that's so weird. When Tina gets when the memories pull out of her, And she gets on the magical creepy floaty chair of death in the white room, and she kind of floats out over the mean water. She sees her mother in the water, and there's a little like violence, like bah, bah, that I hear, and every time I hear her mom going like Tina, 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 and every time I listen to that song, that's what I hear. It's that kind of thing that makes the movies so good, and that's that kind of thing that make the music go so well with the video. The songs can wrap around the visuals so well, and they both understand each other so much to such a degree that it is almost seamless that the two meld together. If you switch, like, it's really 50-50 here. A good video cannot be completed without good audio, and good audio cannot be completed without good video in a movie. That's exactly what happens here, and that's exactly what I think should be in a movie like this one. Okay, now I want to talk a little bit about Fantastic Beasts and some of my favorite songs. So I think let's start out with some Fantastic Beasts talk. The entire Fantastic Beasts, the two movies were composed by James Newton Howard, and unless I am mistaken, I believe the Crimes of Dumbledore. I believe the Secrets of Dumbledore is also going to be composed by James Newton Howard, a very reputable composer who makes amazing music. And actually, some of my favorite songs of the franchise, of the Harry Potter franchise, including Fantastic Beasts, are in Fantastic Beasts. This is really is where it gets interesting, because Harry Potter and Fantastic Beasts are similar. They, of course, exist in the same universe. They have the same general characters. They have Hogwarts. They have Evermore. And of course, it is very similar. But the music is really where it gets different. This is the part I cannot put to words for the life of me. I cannot explain the difference I feel between the two musics, between the two strains of music and kind of the themes that I hear in them. So with Harry Potter, I think it is much less of a goal to make the song feel like it can be heard outside of the movies, if that makes any sense. I think the Harry Potter music does a much better job of helping the story in the movie. But I think the Fantastic Beasts songs can be listened to outside of the movie, and still the story can still be heard to some degree. But I think the themes of Fantastic Beasts are also a little more distinct. This, of course, there are a ton of themes in both, but I think Hedwig's theme was really the one that comes to mind. With the Fantastic Beasts series, we have the main titles, we have Grindelwald's theme, we have Dumbledore's theme, we have Leda's theme, we have so much that is just there. We have the theme of the movie, and then we have the Fantastic Beasts theme. It's crazy the amount of themes that is in Fantastic Beasts. And I think that helps with distinguishing not only the different movies, but also the different parts of the movie. It really breaks down each part of each section and really goes really deep into each of the scenes. The one I'm thinking about right now isn't the same song that I was talking about when Tina went on the chair to get executed. It was the Nita, Tina, and Newt's Trial, which I also found really funny how they named the songs. They have like so many names for each song. For the trial, the first title is Tina and Newt Trial, and then the second title is Let's Get the Good Stuff Out. That's what the woman said when she was taking the memory out of Tina, which I think is just so fun that they put that as the title of the song. That's like, not only, I mean, of course, like, I can hear that, like I was saying before, I can really see the movie when I hear the song, but also when they're running away and the swooping evil is flying around, that theme, I won't sing it because they're gonna sue me, but it's, you definitely know what I'm talking about. It's when Newt's like making his big escape, when he's running like he does. That is scene that I also think Eddie Redmayne did amazing in, as well as Catherine Waterston. But with the swooping evil, I think that scene right now is really where this kind of whole music thing, my point is made. If I play the song for you, of course I will not, but if you listen to the song, any song really, any distinguished song of a big scene in the movies of Fantastic Beasts, you will be able to see the scene. And if I just tell you the title, you will know exactly what I'm talking about. Of course, that can also hold true for the Harry Potter series. For example, the song The Night Bus not that hard to figure out what it's about. But if you hear it, it's all kind of the same thing. And it's kind of the same with other songs. They seem to be very separate and kind of nonsensical if you hear them, you know, kind of together as one long string. In like a Broadway show, like Hamilton, a great Broadway show, and that's really where there are way too many layers to take in the first time you see it. The music is where it ties together. And the music is the story. There is no part in Hamilton where there is no song. The whole story is a huge song. It's a musical, after all. And that kind of is the same with Fantastic Beasts and somewhat Harry Potter. If you listen to a song from Fantastic Beasts, I think you will definitely understand more about what's happening in the scene than if you listen to a song by Harry Potter. That also kind of gets into my point about how the two different kinds of music are very, very different. Just the music is very different. If I played a piece by James Newton Howard in Fantastic Beasts, you will know that what that is. Especially if I play a piece in contrast by Doyle Williams, just blah, or anyone else, you will absolutely hear the difference between the two. Not only because you know that the song I'll play for you is from Harry Potter and the other one is from Fantastic Beasts, but also there's different styles, there's just different notes, different speeds, just different like ways the composers use their talents and match what's happening on screen in the score by their own styles, by their own preferences. And I think Fantastic Beasts also has just one composer, just one man doing the whole thing, whereas the other ones have completely different people doing each section. And yes, people like John Williams did three entire movies, and you can hear that those are movies that sound very similar. This also goes as far as to separate each Harry Potter movie. I think if I play a song from I want to call them pieces so much. That's the proper way. I call them songs. if I play a piece for you, you will likely be able to make a pretty good guess on which era of Harry Potter it's kind of in. The first, second, or third, you know, fourth, whatever. But also, it's like, it gets so much darker. It's like happiness in the first movie, then happiness in the second. And like I was saying last episode, it gets so dark later on. And I think the changing composer also kind of reflects a change in the story. That's a talk for another day. I think, like I said, yes, distinguishing the movies in Harry Potter is also, you can go even farther than that to distinguish the individual movies in the series, not just Fantastic Beasts and Harry Potter. You can distinguish The Prisoner of Azkaban from The Goblet of Fire. And when you think about it, you think of each song, each piece as part of Harry Potter. But when you really break it down and look at each movie, I think it's easy to see just how different they are. The Prisoner of Azkaban, for example, I feel like is one of the most different scores than the other movies. For example, I'm first saying for examples so much. I'd say the song that I think of the most when I think of the Prisoner of Azkaban, or rather the two, are one, this Secrets of the Castle, and two, Buckbeak's Flight. I think both reflect different parts of the story, both reflect different aspects of the story, and I think both have different qualities that really make the Prisoner of Azkaban go, and are really, really good for the story. So it's things like that just make it so different, and why the Fantastic Beasts score is so much different than the Harry Potter score, and yet the movies are so similar. They both tell a story, and yet they both have different aspects, and they both complete different parts that are vital for the success of every Harry Potter movie. Okay, so I want to close out this episode with a statement. A bold statement. Not everyone might agree with me. This might not be a global consensus. But I think if there were to be another movie of Harry Potter, not Fantastic Beasts, another Harry Potter movie, Harry Potter and the 32-year-old Auror, let's call it, I think it should be composed by John Williams. Okay, before you say, no, Oscar, no, that's so bad, hear me out, please. So I think that with the way the movies have at least have gone so far, John Williams is really the person who you think of as the person who composed Harry Potter. He composed the most, he composed the first. He really fits all the categories of the Harry Potter composer. People like Patrick Doyle composed only one Nicholas Hooper, only two. And, yes, Alexander Desplat did compose only two, but he did compose the last. And, of course, these are all very notable names, and everyone knows all the composers, no matter the level of Harry Potter fan you are. But I think John Williams, as the first composer, it doesn't matter that he, you know, composed the most. I think because he's the first composer, he should be the one to compose the last movie. And I think they even wanted John Williams to compose the Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 2. David Yates and David Heyman, the producer and director at the time, both reached out to John Williams saying, yo, compose and conduct the movie, make the score, please. But he couldn't because of his schedule just didn't align. He would have to get the raw cut like way sooner than they could give it to him. So that didn't work out. So they enlisted Alexander Desplat again, which of course worked out perfectly. But I think if there were to go another movie, if another screenplay was written, if they decided to go all out again, then I think John Williams should be the one to close it out. I think that would kind of really be a nice full circle. We start at the beginning, Harry doesn't know anything. He has his moments of realization, the way that it is, you know, it is kind of spun into how he sees the world. And then that can kind of be brought around into him seeing the world exactly the same as he left it, understanding more than he did. He went to another level of thinking in his life. And I think that would definitely be reflected if the same kind of music, if the same story is told from the first couple of movies. Because, of course, Harry goes through a bunch of transformation. He becomes an adult. He does all this stuff. He defeats the Dark Lord. He conquers his past. And that cannot be left just by the wayside without any more told. I think John Williams is really the only one who can conduct and compose the final movie if there were to be another one really talking about how Harry changed. Because the way that movie would kind of go would be kind of like a Cursed Child type movie. It's that 19 years later scene kind of expanded into an entire movie is really how I imagine the next movie to go. And of course, there might be some challenge. I think the challenge would be Harry's kids and Draco's kids and Harry and Hermione and Ron's kids. All that kind of stuff, just like having the difficulty of adulthood would be the challenge of that next movie. And I think John Williams would really understand that because he started when Harry was a kid. So if he is not composing when Harry has kids, I think that would be a huge moment. And I think John Williams is really the composer who understands the most about Harry Potter, and he is the one who could bring it home the best, and he really knows everything there is to know about the scores of Harry Potter. There we go. Great episode. Another perfect episode as usual. I hope you enjoyed this. I certainly did. Now, I'm not going to do another, you know, just general music episode, but I think I'll definitely be talking more about this kind of thing in the future. The differences between Fantastic Beasts and Harry Potter is a topic that really fascinates me that I think we'll definitely be talking about more. In other news, not much, actually. There have been some very interesting clips released by Warner Brothers that I think are definitely worth at least discussing. I think we're not going to do a whole episode on that. I think the final episode before the release before April 15th, the latest episode before April 15th will be the last Fantastic Beasts prediction episode. I'll get all my last predictions in. I'll make in the traditional Gary Vaynerchuk style, I'll make as many wild predictions as possible and then only clip the ones that actually come true. So just so I have at least one that I can say I predicted that actually came true. But actually the one that I found the most interesting was a clip that was said like, what's the way home? That strange mirror writing. So after a quick teaser, I'm not going to go on any longer. We should just close out this episode. ThePotterDiscussion@gmail.com for anything else. There also is a SpeakPipe page link and a Google form link in the show notes. For anything else you want to say, have a wonderful day. Enjoy your time reading Harry Potter, seeing the movies. And as always, remember that happiness can be found even in the darkest of times if one only remembers to turn on the light. I will see you later.
This was the Potter Discussion.